WNST, Towson Baltimore. And Baltimore Positive, we are into football season. We've been doing a lot of chatter about the Ravens and hopes and injuries and all that. We're going to take a little breather right now and get back to real life. And I, you know, Don Mueller, I would say the core of Baltimore Positive, which is talking to people with a voice at the table, talking about things that are challenges for Baltimore. It's never the happiest conversation when this guy comes on, but it's always from the right spirit. Don, I'll let you do the introduction for this guy, because I'm one of the few people, I do know how to spell his name, the last name too.
Well, one of our very a regular on Baltimore Positive, one of our favorite guests, former deputy attorney general, mayoral candidate, big time Baltimore attorney, Tharu Vignaraja, who's got a new gig. What is a CEO. Now that sounds, Tharu, I don't know about you, but that sounds significant to me.
Do they CEO. Let guys from Woodlawn have be CEOs? Because they don't let Dundalk guys do that, Tharu. You know?
CEO of Capital Plus Financial. How did this come about? And give us the elevator speech about Capital Plus.
Oh, I'm really excited. Great to be on. One of my favorite shows to be on. Yeah, look, this is what we call serendipity. Was really enjoying my time being
back. Wait a minute. I'm going to stop you.
He listens to the show.
Are you and Nestor colluding on this word,
serendipity? He listens to the show.
You're using one of Nestor's favorite words now, Tharu.
What was his favorite word?
Serendipity.
Nestor, this is a longer conversation.
It's not my favorite word. It's a way to live your life, that you're in the right place at the right time doing the right thing, and then the right things will happen. That's been happening to me lately. So
this is not going to interest any of your listeners. Serendipity is one of my very favorite words. And do you know something? It's where Sri Lanka got its original name. It used to be called the Island of Serendip, and that's where the word came from.
Wow. I'm going to sit back and let you all do a little serendipity.
You know, Sandra Mueller will like to hear that, right?
Yes,
right,
she will.
If you Google the word serendipity, you will find out that its roots are in a folklore story about a king from the island of Serendip, which was supposed to be the old Sri Lanka back in the day.
All right, let's solve all the crime problems after this. Let's just transition from
where else but Baltimore Positive would you learn the origins of Sri Lanka and serendipity?
Tharu, I would say it's serendipity that you appear here today to educate us about
there
serendipity.
There you go. But it's tell us incredible. About so, Capital Plus, what it is, and how you end up being the CEO. It's neat stuff.
Yeah, look, I'm very, very excited. You know, a couple weeks ago, I was named CEO of Capital Plus Financial. It is one of the largest community development financial institutions in the country. It was very, very involved in, for example, giving out the PPP loans, ended up giving 480,000 loans amounting to about $7.5 billion. 80% of those loans went to minority businesses all across the country. And candidly, this is really exciting for me because it gives me a chance to exercise some new muscles. It gives me a chance to lead in a space where I get to develop some new expertise. At the same time, I get to, you know, renew my commitment to Baltimore. They're well aware of my commitment to the city and the issues that we face. And I'm excited. It's going to be really, really fun.
Tharu, for you and where serendipity lies, you wanted to be mayor a couple of times, right? Then you're not mayor. And then you figure out, all right, I'm not mayor either, by the way. Neither one of us won. How about that? So then you figure out what you're going to do. Speaking of the mayor, Brandon Scott will be joining me at Coco's, his favorite place, on October 8th. Good chance to promote our Maryland Crab Cake Tour and the fact that the Maryland Lottery's gotten behind us to support that with us. So we'll be doing that. But you're not the mayor. So the next thing you do is what do you? You're qualified to do a lot of things, right?
Look, I thought it was most important to try to stay engaged on the issues and try to continue to help. Look, before that, I was deputy AG, I was a prosecutor, I've worn a lot of different hats. It was time for a new adventure, opportunity to try to help in a different way. These are always issues that I've cared about. We talked about housing inequities, economic development inequities, access to capital problems, so many of the challenges that, frankly, Black and brown businesses face in Baltimore, they face across the country. And the chance to try to work on them from a different angle was really exciting. I've had a very privileged career as a lawyer. I've, you know, tried, you know, serious homicides. I've argued serious appeals. I clerked on the Supreme Court. I was a partner at, you know, the largest law firm in the world. I've gotten a chance to have a lot of different roles in the legal world. I thought it was time to try to approach the problem from a different angle. And this seemed like an incredible opportunity to do it. I'm very, very excited.
Are you done with some of those things? I mean, they're like, there's a point where Don and I argue about whether I'm done with baseball at 52, right? So you always say, am I done? Would I ever go back to do that again? Because I once loved it. I'm sure when you're in the middle of murder trials doing what you did, I mean, we're talking, you know, very, very serious days and nights on serious things. There comes a point where you can burn out on that, right? I mean, I would think you can burn out on that.
Yeah, no, it was an incredibly exhilarating time. I don't know that it'll ever be out of my veins. You know, if tomorrow somebody said we really need, you know, to try this case, and I would of course be tempted. I think for the moment I am committed to this new role. It's an exciting opportunity to exercise some new muscles. But at the end of the day, I'm going to always think and approach problems from legal perspective. But I thought it was important to add some additional perspectives to that as well.
Theroux, one of the things we try to do here, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, is to take complex issues and make them understandable for the folks who listen. So when you use the term that we hear a lot, and we hear it more and more, community development investment, what frame that for our listeners? What does community development investment mean?
So let me give a very concrete example, which might help listeners understand. When, for example, in the middle of the pandemic, PPP loans were being distributed, the money was going from the federal government to people that ostensibly needed it. The problem was that the big banks largely said, we're going to be lenders and help process loans for existing customers. And the bigger the loan, the more profitable for us. So we'll focus on the bigger loans, which meant small businesses that wanted $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in PPP loans literally didn't have anyone to go to, especially if they didn't have a banking relationship with one of the big banks. So Treasury actually relaxed its regulations and allowed CDFIs, Community Development Financial Institutions, to play that role. Capital Plus Financial was one of the ones that stepped up. It ended up becoming the second largest processor of PPP loans in the country, 480,000 loans all across the country, again, 80% of which went to minority businesses. But it wasn't just that it went to a lot of different people. It went to a lot of different people for very small amounts. So the average loan amount was $16,000, $17,000. And so all of a sudden, these mom and pop shops, these independent contractors, these sole proprietors, which are also struggling, were not getting access to capital, even though, by the way, the federal government was giving it.
I'm familiar with this. I own a small business, Theroux. Yeah. So I'm nodding my head dealing with Wells Fargo when, you know, in my situation. And, you know, thankfully, I have friends at Rosedale Federal now, who local institution, but I got swept up in it. Everyone did. I mean, you had to know somebody to know somebody to know somebody. And we're all wearing masks in the middle of a plague. I mean, all of my friends were, especially in the restaurant industry, you know what I mean? Like lots and lots of places. And Don and I chronicled all this because really at the heart of Baltimore Positive, when sports stopped and the only thing that mattered was people keeping their jobs and the people who had jobs staying healthy, right?
And that's exactly right. And bear in mind, it's not like the federal government doesn't want the money to get to everyone, especially when you're trying to issue a lot of money to in a very short period of time. It's just hard. It's hard to process the loans effectively. It's hard to mitigate the fraud risks. It's hard to police and make sure you prevent some people that aren't entitled to the money from applying for that money. So it's very, very difficult. And if you lean exclusively on major institutional players like the big banks, it becomes tougher. So CDFIs have always played this role. I think Capital Plus Financial, which is, you know, a national one, it has some real sophistication to it, has been successful in executing that in a lot of different places in a lot of different ways. And that's an example of what a CDFI can do. It tries to make sure that the investment dollars are getting to the people that sometimes are left behind and left out.
You always hate the bad guys, right? And, you know, I know this about you. I was on vacation this summer met some people in the space of federal government and taxes and that stuff. And we were just having like a, you know, a glass of wine kind of conversation over a drink. And they were talking about the volume of fraud perpetuated upon the federal government in clear day last year when all of this money was there, the nefarious interest and the fudging. And, you know, I saw Tom Brady's company got million, you know, the, all of the ones that made their way into print for political reasons or otherwise, but sort of cheating the system. You mentioned fraud, mitigating fraud, I think is what you said. Boy, you know, how about policing the fraud afterward? That's got to be the toughest job in the world right now because plenty of people stole money last year.
And let's remember that this is nothing new. When I was Deputy Attorney General, we had a large and expanding Medicaid fraud division. When there are dollars to be gotten, there is going to be some, you know, bad actors that try to defraud the system and get that money. You have to put in protocols and procedures to prevent it on the front end. And you got to have Medicaid fraud prosecutors, you know, jointly in a joint task force with federal authorities and local authorities to go after them and make sure that they know that there are consequences for that conduct. To your question from earlier, the former prosecutor is never going to forget how important that role is. But there's also examples that don't require fraud. It's just people taking full advantage of the system. When the Restaurant Revitalization Fund dispersed its money earlier this year, $28.6 billion went to 110,000 restaurants all across the country. There were some 200,000 plus restaurants that didn't get a dollar.
Our friends at Fadley's got screwed, man.
Exactly. So, you know, here in Maryland, 96 restaurants got over $1 million, while 2,400 restaurants didn't get a dime. There was a McDonald's in Bethesda that got like $2.7 million, but your mom and pop shops, your Fadley's, your Max's, didn't get a single dollar. That's just arbitrary, right? I mean, there were some restaurants.
Drew, that's so wrong. I apologize for interrupting. I get so angry, and not just because Fadley's folks are good friends. The fact that Fadley's did not get a nickel is criminal. It's criminal, Drew.
Yep. And they're not alone. You know, Damien and I have talked about this a lot. We were doing an interview earlier this week. I'm sure you guys remember that, you know, they had reached out and I was a leading voice in advocating for them. We've called and issued this event called Replenish the Fund, where we had dozens of restaurants clamoring and combining. Senator Cardin and Senator Van Hollen, our state senators, have been leading voices in Congress on this issue. They've got to just fix this. You know, when it was first done, they actually called it a down payment. They knew that $28 billion, as much as it was not enough to cover the gap. They planned on issuing additional money. They've just got to fulfill their pledge and finish the job, because there are literally thousands of restaurants here in Maryland and across the country that were entitled to money, applied for the money, applied on time, and nevertheless didn't get a dollar, even as others almost arbitrarily got it. And the way I described this earlier was, it felt like something that was born of good intentions ended up becoming this game of restaurant roulette. And there were some winners, and then there were some restaurants that were left out that are now on life support, literally clinging on, hoping to survive the next few months of the pandemic.
Well, just awful. We're with Tharu Vidnaraja, the new CEO of Capital Plus Financial. Tharu, in your new role, do you get to continue to live in Baltimore, or do you have to relocate?
No, I will be here. This is home. This is where my heart is. We're going to continue to advocate for all sorts of issues. Unfortunately, many of the problems that we see across the nation, we are at the tip of the spear. We have the worst version of it. You know, we have the biggest challenges when it comes to vaccine access for minorities. We have the biggest problems when it comes to the school situation. We have the biggest problem when it comes to high property taxes. And so I'll get a chance to work on issues that affect cities and states across the country. But tragically, Baltimore has all of those problems in spades, it sometimes feels.
Well, speaking of that, we can't have you on just a day or two before we're recording this interview. I think all of us just shook our heads again. And you're almost reduced to tears every time you see this. But just this week, there was a night where 9 people and 4 children were shot in one night. I mean, Theroux, I know this keeps you up at night. What? How long does this go on?
I mean, I know we're all just so sick and tired of talking about it. And sorry, guys, did I lose you there for a second?
There you go. You're back.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I know we are so sick and tired of talking about this, but I really think it's important to not lose focus that this remains the defining challenge for Baltimore. And it feels like we're not getting any better and we might even be getting worse. Every few months, we see a new crime plan. Every few months, we have another press conference. And then a few days, a few weeks, a few months after that, we're having this conversation. 3 homicides on Sunday, 2 dozen shootings since Sunday, a Tuesday with 9 people shot, 4 of them children. I mean, it's relentless. And the suggestion that we can't do anything about it is probably the most frustrating thing. You know, if I had one, you know, piece of advice for the folks in City Hall, it would be stop pretending like this isn't your responsibility. I hate hearing people say the school board is a state agency, so it's not my responsibility. The police department is a state agency, so crime is not my problem. I just take ownership of these challenges. There is something we can do about them. We can do about them, something about them in the short term and the medium term. There are great ideas out there, but you have to actually execute them. And right now it's not happening.
Well, you know, we were privileged enough to sit with the governor about 2 weeks ago, and it's fascinating how he shovels it back to the city. And I guess as a resident, and, you know, I didn't bristle at much of what Larry Hogan said, but it kind of pissed me off when he told me about his stake in the city versus mine in regard to an ownership situation, to having a condo at the harbor that's still here. And you can call Mueller and Gary Realty. It's available. But I would say the one thing that he harped on was putting bad guys behind bars. And I know that you would agree with that, right?
I would, and let's be very specific. We're not talking about locking up the corner boys and the people that are doing trespass. And we're talking about violent repeat offenders. We're talking about the fact that we were 335 murderers last year, and less than a quarter of those murderers were arrested. I'm not talking about arrested, prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced.
Right.
I'm saying we're not even talking about the arrest rate. In Baltimore County, Don, you and I have talked about this before, 90% of murders result in an arrest. Sometimes it's closer to 100. You simply cannot run a city. And law enforcement is a local issue at the end of the day. I have to agree with Governor Hogan on this. Every jurisdiction takes that as their principal local responsibility. We're just really doing a bad job.
Well, through a couple of things, boy, so many topics, and that's why we love having you on. And I don't like to compare jurisdictions, never did when I was county executive or worked for county executives. City's a hard, hard job, and I think Brandon is really working really hard, and I know he is really, really frustrated by this issue as well. But you just touched on something that we can't ignore because it does matter. About a week to 10 days ago, there was a murder, and Baltimore County hasn't been immune from this nationwide spike in I think we may have lost you again for a minute there, Theroux. So I hope you can still hear me.
Got me? Yep.
Yeah, well, we got you back. They're not immune from this nationwide spike in violence. I mean, it's all over the United States, and Baltimore County's seen that as well. But there was a murder about a week to 10 days ago in Baltimore County, and I was with some friends, and one of them turned to me and said, "You know, it's terrible. You never want any murders, but here's what I'll bet you." And he looked at me and said, "Don, I'll bet you that in less than 2 days, the county will have made an arrest and put the person in jail." And sure enough, I want to say it was a day and a half. It was a news blurb. County police arrest accused suspect for murder 2 days ago. Through what is, I mean, you've studied this a lot. Rather than just us throw this stuff at the wall, why is it that the county consistently arrest the person, certainly within a week, has clearance rates above 90%, and you get these dismal stats in the city. What? And the lines, well, we have lines go through neighborhoods. Half the streets in Baltimore City, half's in Baltimore County. What's the difference, Theroux, as you've studied it?
It's a great question, and I want to start by emphasizing what it is not. It is not that Baltimore County murders are easier to solve. Some people think that the profile of the murders that happen in Baltimore County are different, that there are more domestic violence murders, there are more, you know, anger management murders. That's not true. The same profile of murders that happen in the city happen in the county. They are drug related, they're retaliatory, they're gang related. Those are the kinds of murders that are happening in Baltimore County. Those are the murders that are happening in Baltimore City. There's a very simple explanation for this, which is resources and focus. In Baltimore County, your ratio of detectives to homicides is 1 to 3. There's about a dozen detectives in the homicide squad in Baltimore County. In a bad year, you get 30 to 35 homicides, so 1 to 3. In Baltimore City, that ratio is closer to 1 to 8 or 9. And if a squad of 2 homicide detectives has 15 to 20 homicides in a given year to try to solve, they end up solving about the same number that a squad in Baltimore County does, because it takes a certain amount of time to do it. And always use this as your litmus test. When there is a high profile homicide, whether it's in Baltimore City or Baltimore County, 99 out of 100 times we solve it. You can devote resources and get those high profile murders solved. If it's the murder of a 3-year-old, a 12-year-old, you will get federal agents, local detectives to dedicate resources and solve those cases. But if you have a massive shortfall of officers generally and a significant shortfall of detectives specifically, you're just not going to be able to solve the cases because there's not enough hours in the day.
Well, that's a fascinating analysis. And I have another question, because Nestor alluded to our discussion with the governor that I felt much better about than Nestor did. I thought the governor did a fine job, and I thought we had a good back and forth. The only time,
I would say this. I don't disagree that he was polished and shiny and all that.
Okay, let me.
But go ahead. Well, I just want to defend my position on that.
Let me finish my point. Let me finish my point. So, the only time that I thought he got a little bristly with me was when I wanted to talk about the state's role in parole and probation. And I make no bones about it. People who've listened know that I'm a big Wes Moore fan. I think Wes is a really attractive candidate for governor of the state of Maryland. And one thing that I hear Wes talking about a lot is how he is going to focus like a laser on parole and probation, because he'll use your term. We know who the bad guys are. They're out there, and we need to be on them like white on rice, that we're all over them, and that is a state function. Do you agree that that's an area where a governor can make a difference, and should it?
Certainly. There's no question. There's always an improved opportunity to do that. But here's your basic problem, Don. If you have a state agency function, that means it's happening in Carroll County, Howard County, Baltimore County, and Baltimore City. That plainly doesn't explain the different order of magnitude of violence that's happening in Baltimore City. It's not like Governor Hogan sends worse parole and probation practices and worse parole and probation agents into Baltimore City and has the best ones over in Howard County.
But is it a caseload? But Theroux, I'm going back to your caseload thing with homicide detectives. Is it possibly a caseload and a dedication of resources issue? In other words, are we not, do parole and probation officers, you may know this answer, do parole and probation officers in Baltimore City have a significantly higher caseload than they do in Carroll County?
It's a very good question. My understanding is that they are not defined by jurisdiction that way. But let's work off of the assumption that there is more that they can do. Because frankly, even if there were an equal pattern being done all across the state, you've got to be able to be more focused on Baltimore City because you've got a big problem. That is a place that the state can step up. If I were to say to Governor Hogan, look, Governor Hogan, the role you could play is focus on identifying each month which 20 to 25 folks are coming out of prison and are planning on returning in Baltimore City that are the ones that are most at risk. And I talked about this on the campaign trail as something that the city could do. We could go and partner with the state and say, let's identify the 20, 25 people that are most at risk, sit them down 6 months before they get out, before they're scheduled to get out in March, sit down in September and say, look, folks, we got some good news and we got some bad news. The bad news is you're in this room because you are at greatest risk of being shot or killed or shooting or killing someone else in 6 months when you get out. The good news is that the people in this room don't want that to happen. So we are going to develop a particularly comprehensive approach to the 20 to 25 of you before you get back on the streets. We're going to work with you to make sure you have job training.
What percentage of those 25 guys who've been in prison for a long time, right? You know, are coming back out onto the street for having a gun, for doing something awful, terrible, but we're going to let them out of prison because that's what we have. We have to let them out of prison at some point, right? Yep. What percentage of those people are themselves targets the minute they get out of prison?
I mean, if you're talking about that 20 to 25, the number is it's very, very high. I mean, they live in a world, they work in a world where they are constantly at risk of being a victim or a perpetrator. You've heard Commissioner Harrison talk about the statistics that the victims of homicides in Baltimore City on average have something like 7 to 9 prior arrests, right? These are rarely folks that are not familiar with the criminal justice system. So there's a huge risk, but you could specifically know where they're living, where they're going to work, what kind of job skills deficits they have, what kind of substance abuse problems, what kind of mental health or trauma problems. Ideally, you'd want to start it 2 or 3 years earlier. But if you want to have some quick impact, start 5 to 6 months before they get out and start making sure that those folks are being carefully worked with and monitored so that when they get out, their high risk of being shot or being a perpetrator of crime is as small as you can get it. Yeah, there's obviously some work to be done there. And whether it's the city or the state, I hate playing the game of whose responsibility is it. I happen to think that crime control is a local problem. That is the way our country was designed. The federal government has a very limited role when it comes to that. The city and the counties are supposed to take care of that. But whoever it is, you know, step up and say, this is a big issue, let's take on. And if there are gubernatorial candidates or Governor Hogan or Brandon Scott that want to take ownership of that issue, I applaud them.
Well, Theroux, it's always, I'm dead serious when I say you're one of our favorite guests. You come on, you talk about important topics, you give us important information, and we'll be talking again. We want to hear about what's going on with Capital Plus, but we also want to follow this crime issue because, yeah. And again, we're not alarmists. This is Baltimore positive. Like you, we love this city. Nestor loves
it. Must be talked about. It has to be talked about.
No, we can't do through. Here's what I believe. I know you believe it. We can't do anything else in Baltimore City until we get a handle on this. When we wake up and 9 people are shot and 4 children, it consumes all of the oxygen in the room.
You guys know this. I couldn't agree more. You guys know that the census numbers just came out. Baltimore City lost 35,000 residents between 2010 and 2020, while every neighboring jurisdiction gained 50,000 or more.
In the next census, think about this.
Yep.
Anne Arundel County will go by Baltimore City.
Yep.
In the next census, we are the only city.
Yep. And we are the only city in America that is declining in population and smaller in 2020 than we were in 1920. I mean, the city is literally losing its residents, and you can't blame them when they are going to safer counties with better schools and lower taxes. You just can't blame them for leaving. But here's the really tragic part. They're not leaving from Canton. They're not leaving from Federal Hill. They're not leaving from Guilford and Homeland. It is your Black and Brown communities whose residents are fleeing to counties. It's the West and East part of Baltimore that are losing population at the highest rates. And there's exactly 1 year in the last 50 years where the population has gone up in Baltimore, and it was the year after murders got to below 200,
right.
2011, 2012.
Theroux, just to support what you said, I had someone who studies the census tracts very closely, and he pointed out to me the other day that several of the neighborhoods that you talked about, when you said, look, they're not leaving from Fells Point, they're not leaving. Those census tracts in those areas actually added residents. The flight Correct. From Baltimore, those census tracts down near Nestor added residents.
Good. Tell it's, Jeff to yep. sell my condo.
It's the
we
other
want to move to
neighborhoods,
town, you know?
As you said, where the black and the brown people live who put up with this crime every night, where people are fleeing. So I can't thank you enough for always bringing this issue.
We didn't even talk
attention.
About taxes. You brought it up like 2 seconds ago, your big thing about taxes.
Yeah, I want to get back.
Right?
We'll have him back on and talk property taxes. I have a lot of questions. I can't do it in 2 minutes.
It's a big issue, Don and Nestor, because you guys love her so much. You should know that my sister's birthday is today.
Oh, happy birthday, Krish.
To Krish. Frankly, a great part of Baltimore is the vital role that they are playing on the Afghanistan and refugee situation. LIRS, my sister's organization, Lutheran Immigration Refugee Services, headquartered in Baltimore.
All right, let's get her on the show. Don's taking notes right now.
I'm
look
already
at Don.
Reaching,
good.
I'm already
writing it down.
Texting.
Get your pen out.
I'm
That's
already
me being a good
I'm
brother.
Texting.
Happy birthday.
I'm already texting Krish. I'm going to tell her you wished her a happy birthday, and we're going to get her on the show.
By the way, Theroux, this is Perfect. The same pen Moeller gave me back at Dundalk High in 1982. It's, you know, I was going to give him the red ink here
I'm
so he
frugal.
Can write it down in red, you know. So
I love it. I love it. All right, gentlemen.
Appreciate
so
you.
Much.
Taxes next time, all right?
Great
we'll get heavy with that, all right,
I love
brother?
It. Let's do it.
Theroux Vigneraj joining us here along with my co-captain in all things. We've been fighting a lot lately. It makes the show better. It's football season. I haven't even talked baseball with him. Don Moeller is former Baltimore County executive, my former high school guidance counselor, and friend of everyone. I'm the one that angers everyone here. You can find me, Nasty, at WNST.net. Well, you can find us at Costas with Johnny O. You can find me at Wise Markets on Sunday at 11 a.m. with the Crab Wagon and eating the Wise $6 signature crab cake. Wise Conversations, they're what we have around here. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking important issues and Baltimore Positive.